Hi, this is Pastor Greg, and you're listening to Chosen Generation Radio. Get more at ChosenGenerationRadio.com. That's Chosen Generation Radio, where no topic is off limits and everything filtered through biblical glass.
My passion is the fight for freedom. My father fought for World War II defending our country. Today, we are no longer fighting with guns. Instead, we are fighting an ideological battle for control of our country by contributing to causes that support your constitutional rights. I am Patriot Mobile.
Sexual predators and comprehensive sex education both break down inhibitions. That's what they start with. They also gain trust with the child and then slowly start to get them towards sexual activity.
Anything goes. You are teaching children adult child sex. You're teaching transgender issues. And, you know, children are moldable and influenced by that.
They said, okay, now we need you and your team to be able to explain what homosexuality is to a four-year-old student.
To introduce this kind of material at that age, frankly, it's child abuse.
You're going to teach our children that it's okay for any two children of any age, of any sex, to have sexual intercourse with each other as long as two components are present, one's using a condom and they both give consent. Did I hear that correctly?
It's not a neutral venue. There's no such thing. Okay, the schools are doing your job. They are discipling your children, but they're not discipling them in the faith of Jesus Christ.
It's only the exceptional child that even survives that system. Most do not survive. Most have not survived.
They believe that children are sexual from birth and that they deserve and have the right to be sexually active and to seek sexual pleasure. And if anyone is stopping them from that, then you are judging and oppressing them.
Even kindergarten now, they're wanting to teach them more and more perverse information and acts and put that into the children's minds. And once that poison is in a child's mind, it doesn't leave. They'll always remember what they learned. And it's by design, it's orchestrated.
In my humble opinion, it will be worse before it gets better.
Hi, I'm Tim Sheff, a certified natural health practitioner of over 40 years. I want to introduce you to a product that changed my life. The product's called Vibe, available at cgrwellness.com. I thought I was on a good nutritional program before I discovered Vibe. I was taking the traditional vitamin and mineral tablets, wasn't really feeling any different. So I tried Vibe. Vibe is an all-in-one vitamin and mineral supplement. It's a liquid multivitamin. It's cold-pressed, whole-food sourced, non-radiated, gluten-free, and has no pasteurization. Vibe is like fresh juicing without all the work. It supports four areas of the body: cardiovascular health, immune health, anti-aging, and healthy cell replication. Vibe is available in a 32-ounce bottle for home use or a very handy 1-ounce travel packet for life on the go. The first time I tried Vibe, I had more energy in about 20 minutes. I started thinking clear, even believe I slept better. Get yours today at cgrwellness.com. Coupon code CHOSENGENRADIO at checkout and receive $20 off your first order of $50 or more. That's cgrwellness.com, coupon code CHOSENGENRADIO. Get yours today.
These statements have not been evaluated by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. Any of the products do not treat, reduce, cure, or prevent disease.
Welcome to Chosen Generation with your host, Pastor Greg Young.
But you are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a peculiar people, that you should shew forth the praises of Him who has called you out of darkness into His marvelous light, which in time past were not a people, but are now the people of God, which had not obtained mercy, but now have obtained mercy.
And now, Chosen Generation, where no topic is off limits and everything is filtered through biblical glasses. And now, here's your host, Pastor Greg.
There we go. And welcome back to Chosen Generation Radio, where no topic's off limits and everything filtered through biblical glasses. And folks, we are, hang on, I'm going to adjust my chair here. We are truly living in extraordinary times. I guess, you know, in many respects, you could say, hang on, let me get my, there we go. All right, now you can hear me on all channels. Hi, this is Pastor Greg. You're listening to Chosen Generation Radio, where no topic's off limits and everything filtered through biblical glasses. We are living in extraordinary times. And I think that that might even be an understatement. But we're watching some things that I think are quite historical. And I don't want to use hyperbole. I don't want to overstate. But I don't really believe in my spirit that we're overstating the significance of what's going on. Now, we know there's going to be a lot of birthing pains, but I think we're experiencing a lot of those birthing pains right now. And I welcome my next guest again, live from Tel Aviv, Dr. David Wormser, Center for Security Policy. And Dr. Wormser was over in Israel preparing to do some diplomatic work and so on, and suddenly found himself in the middle of a war.
Yeah, these things happen.
Yeah, yes, they do. Well, you know, these things do happen. I want to get to. I want to. That's great. No, you got to keep some humor in the midst of all this, right? I want to get to, because you know there have been posts that have been done. It came up in one of my interviews that I did this morning, just kind of, you know, a ponder, and that is, you know, with the advanced security and defense system that we know Israel has, and Israel is known worldwide for its defense prowess. How in the world can we explain such a significant and dramatic failure? And there's no other way. I can't think of any other way to assess this, right? I mean,
at this point, you know, almost all communications were by regular cell phone, which tells you that for some reason the emergency channels were all down. And I think that's what we're, you know, the military isn't saying much about these operational questions, and there was going to be, I'm sure, a commission of inquiry and investigations and testimonies, and it all come out within weeks or even days at the end of the war. But right now they're focused on fighting the war. So we're getting only sort of an indicator. But what I'm hearing from people who might really, you know, who might really know this, and just the general sense, is that something more serious happened on Saturday morning in terms of the cyber defense structure. Yes, we know we have evidence of Hamas taking their little drones and bombing, you know, their security cameras. The Israeli security fence has security cameras so that they can see and monitor the situation. Yeah, that's one thing, but that doesn't explain what happened, because there was Israeli soldiers right there and so forth. So I something much more serious happened. And one indicator of it is that as far as 25 kilometers in, there was no response to EMT calls, to 9/11 calls. The whole 9/11 system basically ceased to function, from what we can tell. And the obviously the internal communications between units,
right,
between police and military, all that stuff, there's no evidence that there was any. And you know, this is a country that's highly connected. Hearing a lot of aircraft in very serious formations, but whatever. Those are some pretty big booms.
What floor are you on, David?
I'm on the third floor.
Okay.
Of a four-floor place.
Okay.
And the shelter, we'll know when we have to go to the shelter. The shelter's minus two, so it's two floors underground.
It's not bad.
It's not bad. They have wine and cheese down there. So.
Well, that's nice. That's nice. How much warning do you get? Somebody told me today that how long?
90 seconds.
90 seconds. Okay.
It depends on where you are. I mean, if they divide it into 15-second envelopes. The envelope around Gaza is 15-second warning, which is no warning. Then you have 30-second, then you have 60-second, and 90-second. We're at the on the inner part of this 90 seconds, so we probably really only have about 70 seconds.
Okay. Okay.
70, 80 seconds.
And have you timed yourself going down the stairs?
Yeah, 0.1 seconds.
I'm leaping.
Yeah, forget the stairs. Use gravity.
Yeah,
I mean, people walk down. It's orderly.
Right.
You get down there. You're down there after about 30, 40 seconds. It actually is quite quick, mm-hmm. and quite orderly, and everybody's calm. So,
and you said it's a minus two, so that means it's you're two stories underground.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. It's two stories underground. It's a very large. Shelter. There is a community shelter here too, but since they have wine and cheese, a lot of the neighbors of the hotel actually come and stay in the shelter here too. Mm.
So, wow. What's the security checkpoint for the people that are coming in? How do they is the hotel aware of?
Well, basically, generally the hotel's open. There's no checkpoints.
Okay.
In the hotel over the last few days, because of the fear of these Hamas terrorists roving around,
right?
They have a gate, and the security guard will open the gate. And you have to be a guest or employee of the hotel. But when the air raid siren goes off, the gates just open. They just open it. And just anybody can come in right away.
Okay.
Because, sort out whatever. they're allowed to. I mean, it's an air raid. You go to where you can go.
Right, right. Understood. All right. So go ahead and continue with what you were saying, please. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, so I forgot exactly where I was. Whatever. I mean, I actually forgot my train of thought. Where were we on the
I guess the progression of what has been at where we're at right now, I guess, would be the progression.
Okay. So the progression of where we are right now is, so we are now really at the end of the first phase of the war. The end of the first phase of the war is the catastrophe, the surprise attack, stabilizing the situation. Now comes phase two. Phase two is when the Israelis are actually going to go to war. And they're going to go to war. My strong suspicion is that they're going to reoccupy Gaza and wipe out Hamas in Gaza. It is unlikely that it'll stay quiet up north. And in fact, it's not quiet up north.
Right.
Hamas and Jihad have units in Lebanon, and those individual units now in the last 4 or 5 hours have been doing things, and there's been some shooting, firing across the border. Hezbollah has not yet joined, so the question is, can it stay contained that way, where Israel's firing back over the Lebanese border but dealing with only the Hamas units there, or whether this will escalate further? And I think the money's on most likely escalating further on some level.
When we were closing on our previous interview, one of the things that we talked about was that Russia is meeting with the Arab League, and they're mm-hmm. talking about a two-state solution. And we talked about, Israel's only 40 miles across, period. So they're really, and one of the notes that I wrote down is that, every time that Israel, would give up any kind of land whatsoever, they end up with the same situation that happened here. I know where we were. We were talking about the mass failure of the invasion and the IDF and why, you know, and you said that everybody's talking on cell phones now, that the main communication hubs seem to be hampered in some way.
I think they're back online, the EMT. But again, that's a major question that needs to be addressed,
right?
Because Israel's cyber warfare and defensive cyber warfare capabilities are second to none. The United States buys its cyber systems from Israel. The United States and Israel are it. There is no number three in the world.
So the question then would have to be, how in the world could they have dismantled Israel's communication system in light of what you just said?
Well, it goes back to this question of this, you know, when Tolkien said this malice, this sleepless malice is on the move.
Right.
We have to come to terms with the fact that China, Russia, Iran, Venezuela, Cuba, North Korea are all surging their capabilities to find our vulnerabilities. And they're working together, very closely together. So you're dealing with massive countries with intense hostility to the idea of America. And they're working together. And again, I would consider this a test run for what they could do to us in another 9/11 circumstance or, God forbid, a major war. So I think that this is not Hamas. This is Iran, and it's not even Iran. It's Iran, North Korea, China, Russia, all of them working together and pooling their most talented resources and most talented programmers and so forth to wage cyber war. And while we have excellent defenses in the United States and Israel has excellent defenses,
right?
We in Israel have roughly the same defenses. Israel buys from America. America buys from Israel. We both have the same technologies. The fact that Israel was taken down, if that is in fact what happened, and I believe it was, it is, if that is what happened, then the United States is very vulnerable right now. And there has to be a solution found. The only problem is, as with every war, if you only play off a defense, you're going to be caught off guard every once in a while. You've got to go on the offensive. So I think this is where I think the United States and Israel and Europe have to start thinking, how much are we going to tolerate? One of the lessons people told me here in Israel is, we learned our lesson. Don't let a threat build up until it's too late.
Sure. Sure.
You know, when somebody says they want to kill you and they threaten you and they start building up, nip it in the bud. Don't wait till it becomes serious.
Yeah. Take the threat seriously.
Don't wait till it becomes big.
Right. Now,
this now goes for the United States. Take this seriously.
Now, Schumer and five others are in Beijing right now. They're having conversations. There are some reports that Schumer has taken a pretty strong stance toward Xi Jinping over his lack of aggressiveness towards the acts of Hamas. But I talked to Nan Su just a few minutes ago, and Nan said that the CCP have formal relations with Hamas and have for years. They train Taliban fighters in China and have for years. And China recently, it's been discovered, has done a deal with their own mafia to basically give them free rein in return for them assisting China in certain matters. Much as Putin uses the Russian KGB as the Russian mafia now. All of that being said, what concerns does Israel have regarding China's involvement with this war?
Well, there's a lot. I mean, I don't think they're worried about China giving military aid because China's not really it's pretty far away, and it doesn't have that projection capability that the United States has.
Okay.
But that said, I think what they're beginning to realize is how much China has helped Iran and helped the Hamas and helped the Palestine Islamic Jihad and Hezbollah. The Chinese are the big proliferators of technologies.
Right.
That are now so threatening. You know, at the end of the day, who is Hamas? Who is Iran? I mean, these people couldn't hold a candle to Western technology. They have technology because they have access to Western technology, and they have access to American universities to train their kids.
Yeah.
And they have access to China, and China has access to American universities and American technology.
Oh, absolutely.
So we're literally enabling our enemies to build their power against us. The Israelis do too. They keep allowing concrete to be imported into Gaza because, you know, it's humanitarian concrete. You can't build houses. You can't build buildings. Well, that concrete's going to build the tunnels and bunkers.
Right.
You know, it's unfortunate, but because of our morality, we actually sell our enemies the means to threaten us. So again, the key is China hostile in its rhetoric? Is it building up? Are there signs of acute preparation for something? Is Russia acting that way? Is Iran acting that way? Is Colombia, Venezuela, Salva, and Brazil acting that way? And when you look down the line, you see the movement of these forces of evil, really, that are gathering. There's a gathering storm the West has to become aware of. Now's the time to prepare for it. America shouldn't make the mistake Israel did and wait for it to get so big.
Do you think that our Secretary of State, Anthony Blinken, is he lying or is he blind when he suggests that the $6 billion that we gave to Iran is in no way helping Hamas?
He's lying. He's lying, but he might actually believe his lie on some level. It's spin. I mean, they believe their own spin. We used to use the word drink their own Kool-Aid. Yeah. I mean, come on, you can't be serious and maintain that. You can't be serious about getting in front of Congress and saying we're enforcing sanctions when we basically, the pre-sanction level of oil trade that Iran has with the world is as high now as it was then, in fact, higher, much higher. So how are you applying sanctions,
right,
if the oil trade, which is sanctioned, right, is at $100 to $140 billion a year? It's not true. It's just not true.
Right. Right. So I guess the question is, now we talked a little bit about, you know, the opening up of three fronts. We're talking about Lebanon, Syria, and Gaza. Is that correct?
Lebanon, Syria, and Gaza. Yes.
Okay. So, I'm going to try and, pull up a map here really quick and see if I can get us an idea as to what that kind of looks like. So here we go, folks. I'm going to bring this over here, cover me up, and let you take a look at the map, which is far more important than looking at me. All right, so down to the south, we've got Egypt. But the Gaza, our issue right now, and we mentioned in the earlier program this morning when we were talking with you that are reports that Israeli citizens were murdered in Egypt, which is why Mossad put out the warning that they did. But there's this little gray area here, folks, and that's Gaza. And so it's from this Gaza gray area that they are launching out and attacking. Is that correct?
That is correct. It's small but fairly dense. There's almost 2 million.
Now, we've also got this particular map shows kind of a graying area, and it is around Nablus, the West Bank, Bethlehem, Hebron,
it's like a backwards B.
Yes, correct.
That is what is called the West Bank, although that's really not a proper term. It doesn't mean anything and never was used. It's Judea and Samaria. Judea is where you see Jerusalem, which is like that center area of the B,
mm-hmm.
where it cuts in. That is Jerusalem.
Right.
North of Jerusalem is Samaria. South of Jerusalem is Judea.
Okay. Now, relative to the areas that we're talking about, so they're talking about.
By the way, just south of Jerusalem, literally 2-3 kilometers south of Jerusalem, is Bethlehem, and Bethlehem was just hit by a missile.
Now Bethlehem is in this gray area in the map that I've put up, and
it's under the Palestinians.
Okay, that's what I was just going to ask. So that's part of what they consider to be the two-state solution, if you will.
Yes.
And they would give that part of Israel away to the Palestinians under their proposed agreement.
About 30% of that area is under the full authority of the Palestinians already.
As it sits right now. And this was one of the... And now one of the other areas when we talk about this breakdown, we've identified, folks, the communication side of this, but one of the other issues that's associated with this is the fact that there was a kind of a chumming up, and you mentioned it in our first interview this morning. You can't have a cobra sleeping in your bed. There was a chumming up of Israel in allowing these immigrants, these Hamas fighters, to essentially live in their kibbutz and to be a part of the community. And what we've identified here in the program to help folks to understand this, Kamal Saleem, before he became a believer and left Islam 20 some odd years ago, he referred to this as civilization jihad, or the sixth pillar, and every single Muslim around the world is carrying out a form of civilization jihad if they've not picked up a weapon and started shooting their neighbors. That is, you know, and so the civilization jihad is buying the businesses in your neighborhood, buying up homes in your neighborhood, putting mosques up in your neighborhood, all of those things. And now, I mean, in America, it's become crazy. You and I talked about this a few weeks ago, this whole craze of loving Andrew Tate and all this nonsense.
Yeah.
Look. He is a Christian who has accepted Islam, who is promoting Islam, and ultimately, folks, be very clear, they will kill you. They're supposed to.
This is the lesson that the Israelis in southern Israel just learned. You see, to go back, I mean, that's not a history lesson, but this really began in 1993 with what was called the Oslo Agreements. The Cold War was over. The Soviet Union had collapsed. There was an organization called the Palestine Liberation Organization with Yasser Arafat. Remember the terrorist organization that did the Munich Olympic massacre of the Israelis? They were really the Cadillac of terrorist organizations. And through them you had Carlos the Jackal and, you know, little drummer boy stuff, and you saw Patriot Games and so forth. These were the Palestinian terrorists, all part of the PLO, and that they trained the IRA, they trained the Bader-Meinhof gang in Germany, the Red Army fraction in Italy, and then the Red Army in Japan. This was really the clearinghouse for KGB, Soviet-based terrorist organizations. So the Israelis thought despite the fact that the organization was created in 1964, not 2,000 years ago, 50 years ago, or anything. I mean, it was a KGB creation as part of its, quote, liberation strategy against the West.
Right.
The Israelis thought, these guys now are orphaned. The Soviet Union fell apart. They're going to wither at the vine. They're so weak, they're going to fall apart. So instead of doing what I would have done, which is say, let's kill them corpse, they said, let's use that. Let's bring them in and solve the Palestinian issue because they're so weak, their whole survival will depend on us. So they brought in the Cobra.
Yeah.
And the Cobra used every minute and every grain of sand given them and every dollar of aid given them to build an army, to build the terrorist structure, and to build subsidiary terrorist organizations and to encourage the growth of other terrorist organizations until the PLO became a mini state. 3 years after the PLO came into the West Bank in Gaza, you started getting the mass waves of terrorism. A bad year in Israel for terrorism was 8-10 people killed in a year, something like that, over a whole year. By 1996, you were getting like 40, 50 people killed a year, 60, 70 people killed a year. And then by 2002, you had 1,000 people killed in a year because of the growth of this terrorist cancer in itself. The Israelis reinvaded, to some extent, the West Bank, and they sort of cast a security shadow over it. So that's why there's not that much going on in the West Bank right now. But the Israeli response to Gaza was, you know what? Let's just leave and build a wall. So yeah. That now, and so what did Hamas do? They built tunnels under the wall. They built missiles to go over the wall and high explosives to go through the wall. And that's what you're dealing with now. Every inch of territory Israel has given up to the Palestinians has become a launching pad for killing Jews.
You know,
and the bigger the territory, yeah, the bigger the death.
Well, they're putting these pictures up showing a mosque in Gaza that was bombed.
And there will be hospitals and there will be schools because we know they use schools and hospitals and mosques as missile launching pads.
Thank you.
And arsenals to store their weapons.
Yep.
And that's where the tunnels for their leadership, they're under those places.
Yep. All right. I want to go back up here for just a second and look at this map and then I'll take it down. So we've got Gaza was the initial launching point. We've talked about this gray area, and again, the problem with the gray area is that's the Cobra sleeping in your bed. But we also then have up to the far north, we have Syria and a likely assault in the very north, which is already happening, right? And actually, I think the yellow here would be, yeah, Lebanon. So there's missiles already coming in out of Lebanon. You've got, yes, you've got, strong probability that you're going to have assaults coming from Syria. So the whole northern tip of Israel is going to be surrounded on two sides with the sea on one side. And then really back behind it is this gray area that has a lot of Hamas infiltration. So you really can't trust it.
Right. They've already tried. You see that area that said Nablus?
Yep.
They've already tried to build like homemade missiles and smuggle them in there and shoot them from there onto Tel Aviv. So if Israel really gave up that territory fully and didn't have the security shadow over
it. Right.
You know, they, about 60% of the territory, the Israeli army's there, and they are pretty, you know, up into close to the city so that they can reach out and touch you very easily. If it weren't for that, we would be facing what happened in Gaza from the West Bank. And all you have to do is look at the geography. It means the entirety of Israel would be there'd be the slaughter going on across, you know, 200-300 miles of borders.
Right. There just wouldn't be, there wouldn't be anything now, there.
Now, remember, Syria is contiguous. It has Syria, and that's attached to Iraq, and then that's attached to Iran. So that's a land bridge from Iran to the border with Israel. So the Iranian Revolutionary Guards are on the border of Israel and Syria. They're in Lebanon. Hezbollah is their proxy in Lebanon. It's a huge organization with about somewhere between 300,000 and 500,000 missiles. Many of which are very powerful missiles. And you have the ability for Iran to keep resupplying through by land. So the Israelis are doing a lot over the last years to keep that isolated by every week you hear four or five Israeli airstrikes, et cetera, in Syria. But this is a great concern for the Israelis. So the Israelis have now mobilized 300,000 troops.
Okay.
This is large, as we said, 4% of the population, right? What I'm hearing is the vast majority of those troops have been mobilized to the north, not to Gaza. So that tells you how much concern there is.
Yeah, yeah, of course. Well, yeah, but it all, yeah, wow. Especially in light of the fact that, Gaza right now is, it was where, you know, the majority of, of the attack initially came from. Right.
Yes.
So you're so if you're shifting all of your troops up north, in spite of the fact that Gaza has been the headquarters by which the enemy has been launching, that gives you a strong indication that Israel has grave concerns about what's getting about the storm that's getting ready to come from the north. And again, as we've said, on two fronts, both Lebanon and Syria.
Exactly, two fronts in the north. And of course, if you look at Jordan, Jordan's been at peace with Israel.
Right.
It's been at peace with Israel for 30 years. So the border there is not that heavily defended. So you could see terrorists crossing over into Jordan and using that weak border with Israel to hit into Israel.
Now,
so that's another big concern. So really almost everything now.
Yeah.
Is under threat. Similarly with Egypt, they're a bit worried about Egypt's ability to stop these terrorists. And the border with Egypt is not that heavily defended either because Israel's at peace with Egypt.
Well, and Egypt already, I mean, we already know that there's been compromise in Egypt because there were Israelis that were murdered in Egypt since the beginning of all this.
Yeah, and the Egyptian government does not have good control over the Sinai Peninsula. That's that big triangle that's part of Egypt that attaches to Israel.
Well, I would suggest that we also know that Egypt has an issue because, you know, what was it, 8 years ago or so, roughly, that the Coptic Christians were taken captive in Egypt. Those are Egyptian Christians, and they were taken captive in Egypt by Islamic adherents who then cut their heads off on video.
Yeah, and we have to remember Al-Qaeda was headed by a Saudi, but it was number two was an Egyptian.
Yeah.
And he was the real mastermind behind all this.
And again, this is not to paint a picture and say, oh, the Egyptians are bad people or the Syrians are bad people or the people in Lebanon. That, you know, Lebanon at one time was a very strong conclave of Christianity. This is Brigitte Gabriel's story comes out of there. This is where Brigitte was as a young girl growing up when Lebanon was overrun.
But Lebanon actually had very good, they didn't have diplomatic relations with Israel, but that was called the good fence by the Israelis because people would trade across the border between Israel and Lebanon.
Right.
And the Lebanese nowadays are still they really hate Hezbollah and they want to get rid of them, but they can't. As far as the Egyptians go, remember, their president was killed by these Islamists, Anwar Sadat, for making peace with Israel. So they've suffered at the hands of these crazies as well.
Right.
So,
well, and then, you know, when you look over at Syria, you know, you've got the same thing. And there's, you know, there's atrocities happening up in northern Syria right now at the border of Syria and Turkey. Arkitsan, I think is what it is. I may be pronunciating that right. But the people there, those are the Armenians. Hundreds of thousands are running for their lives because Turkey right. has essentially cut as Azerbaijan. I those names.
Azerbaijan.
So they've cut Azerbaijan loose. And are letting them slaughter the Armenians. I mean, that is what's happening.
It's wherever. I mean, look, there are good Muslims, but wherever the Muslim world touches the non-Muslim world,
okay. I'm probably getting in trouble for this, but I really don't care. We all want to believe. You know, or have the fantasy about the goodness in people. The truth of the matter is, and the Hebrew writings say this, the Old Testament says this too. There is no, I mean, as a matter of fact, it's in the Old Testament. The heart of man is wicked, period. End of story, yeah. Game over. The heart of man is wicked. Sin has engulfed mankind. And the heart of man is wicked. That's just the reality. That's the way it works. Yeah. Okay. And that's what we're watching. We're watching, as you said, darkness, you know, creeping over. That was part of the prayer that I prayed was against the darkness. So to say, you know, there's good Muslim. No, there's not. There's not, because if you're Muslim,
well, they're irrelevant is the problem.
Well,
if you have one good Muslim and there are 100 bad Muslims, they don't have critical mass.
They're irrelevant until the other ones show up that say, "Okay, now it's time to follow the rules."
Yeah, they force them to.
I'm just telling you that they're irrelevant until that happens. I'm not saying let's go target anybody. I'm just saying, look, you folks, you better be aware and you better be awake and you better realize that there's no such thing as a good, peaceful Muslim that's going to somehow be on your side if this all blows up in your neighborhood. The only way that's going to change is if they renounce their Islamic belief system, period.
And even if for some reason there was such a person, he would be the only one, and he'd be too weak to do anything about it. He'd just kill him. It'd be suicide for him to try. So, you know, I lived with that illusion. It was part of the thing I believed when I was young, that there are these democratic Muslims, and if it's just like Eastern Europe, it's bad governments and good people, etc. And I learned the hard way that there's no critical mass.
No.
Did I know some people who might have been real democratic people who are really, you know, decent? Yeah, I did. But, you know, when you're talking about a country of 27 million like Iraq, one does not make a majority. You know,
no,
and that's the hard, sad truth I found, which is you may find a collection of 5 or 6 or 10, and there and you get faith from that. I mean, faith in them from that. But 5 or 6, when they go back to their country, it's hopeless. It's hopeless.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. I agree. And then you've got this this assault on Bibi Netanyahu. You know, again, and some of it is coming out of, you know, out of MAGA. In people saying, oh well, you know, it was he never should have, you know, congratulated Biden and so on and so on. And we talked about it yesterday, but it has to be. Here's the thing. These things have to be repeated in order to rebuke and deflate lies and deception. Bibi Netanyahu had no choice, and he was attempting not to come alongside or agreement. And there's people who are saying, oh, Biden is the most pro-Israel president that there's ever been. Your reaction to that?
Saying shalom doesn't make you pro-Israeli. At the end of the day, actions matter. And this is an administration that has been relentlessly hostile to Israel, probably the most hostile, although the Obama administration gives them a run for the money. But that's really not a good comparison because in many ways, the Biden administration is just Obama's third term. So let's just say the three terms of the Obama administration have been the most hostile that have ever been against Israel in a context where most Americans have been the most pro-Israeli. You know, in the 50s, Eisenhower wasn't very pro-Israeli, but there was a couple issues there. One was Americans didn't know much about Israel. Israel was run by a socialist party. We were in the middle of a Cold War. We weren't so confident that they were so solidly in the Western camp. I mean, there are a lot of reasons, and we didn't want Israel to be destroyed, or we weren't anti-Israeli, but we weren't that pro-Israeli. Here we're talking about an era in which the Israelis are clearly our ally. They vote with us more than any other nation in the UN. They've always taken the American side on any international dispute. There's no light of day between their foreign policy and their support for the United States and you know what the United States asks of it for support. And the American people are genuinely pro-Israeli and begin to understand that we share common values and a common foundation. The Israelis themselves are no longer socialists. They're run by non-socialist parties, and they are increasingly more respectful in religion and religious. They really are becoming more like America has always been. Unfortunately, is less so now than was, but what really made America, America. So in many ways, and their the defense cooperation was very deep. The Israelis share all their intelligence with the United States, vice versa. So they're really one of our closest allies in the world. I, having been in the U.S. government, I think only Britain is comparable, and I don't think Britain was ever integrated as much, more than Israel. They were the same level. So that we're really talking about Israel, the United, and Britain are the two key allies here. So to be anti-Israeli and to treat them with the way the Biden-Obama III administration does is really a big break from the past and break on alignment with where America is as a people. And it's really because the progressives, the radical progressives, dominate the foreign policy establishment. They dominated on Latin America, which is why they got rid of conservative governments in Colombia and put in a narco-terrorist, why they hated the conservative government of Brazil and cooperated to get a rabid communist sovereign elected in Brazil, why they are putting so much pressure on the El Salvadorian government, trying to bring it down. Because it's a conservative government, why they pretty much openly campaigned for the leftist communist in Chile to try to get him elected, which they did a few months ago. We're losing Latin America, and we're losing Latin America because this administration sides with the anti-Americans in Latin America, with the narco-terrorists and communists in Latin America. So the same crowd, their fellow travelers, are the same ones dealing with the Middle East. And now we find that, lo and behold, the guy who headed Iran policy ran an Iranian government influence operation within the U.S. government. Our own enemy, our own government was run by Iranian minions, Robert Malley. And by the way, they're still refusing to remove some of the people he put in, one of which is head of special operations in the Pentagon. So for those of us who wish that America has options against Iran, the person who's in charge of special operations, the civilian who's in charge of special operations, has been identified as an Iranian agent. Whew. This is the situation we're in with this administration.
Well,
no, they're not pro-Israeli.
and you know, this is the kind of stuff that you know, Phil Haney was identifying in the Obama administration and surely would have identified in this Biden administration if he'd not been murdered.
Yep. Yep. By the way, if you want to know the name of that agent, it's public information. Her last name is Tabatai. T-A-B-A-T-A-B-I, I think. Tabatai, A-I at the end. So, yeah. I mean, how are we going to win when we populate our own government with our enemies? Look, our Congress, we have a look at the squad. Look at the whole Progressive Caucus. They openly say that the American system is evil. I mean, our own Congress is filled with people who believe America is an evil country. And yeah. Evil not because we have evil policies, but because our system of freedom is an inherently evil system that needs to be replaced by socialism. They make no qualms about that. They're not hiding it.
It's Ariane, it's A-R-I-A-N-E, Ariane Tabatabai, and she has been reported. There's a Washington Times article about it. Lawmakers seek answers after reports of links between top Pentagon official and Iran. This is dated September 26, 2023. Very, very clear. You know, you mentioned, by the way, the issue of the cyber attacks. And what pops into my mind is the same thing, you know, with this. Remember, we had Eric Swalwell, right? and you know, his interaction with the Chinese spy whores, and then introducing these prostitutes to all the other members of the Democrat side of the House Judiciary, along with whoever else he introduced them to. And then Reuters does an in-depth investigation and discovers that, hey, lo and behold, an NSA software program that should not be in anybody else's hands is in the hands of the Chinese and being used against American interests and against Americans. So is it any, you know, should there be a, here we have someone working, a senior Pentagon official who worked for Robert Malley, the gentleman whose name you mentioned, in the state.
Robert Malley right now is under investigation for espionage, basically.
Well, there you go.
He headed our Iran policy.
Yeah. Robert, and this is another article. Robert Malley, mystery deepens as Biden's envoy to Iran remains, quote unquote, sidelined. This was just in July. This is the thing, man. Folks, this is the thing to understand. If you were working in Intel, all of these pieces would have elevated your alert to, like, you know, DEFCON 5. You know what I'm saying? I mean, you would be on, or DEFCON 1, whichever direction you want to go. This would be at the highest level of, oh my God, we're about to get hit. Somebody, one of our friends, are about to get hit.
You know, I'll give you another name. Maher Bitar, M-A-H-E-R, Bitar, B-I-T-A-R. Maher Bitar is the director, senior director for intelligence at the National Security Council. That is the body, the person who controls all intelligence coming in and out of the White House and prepares for the president his intelligence briefings. He is the eyes and ears of the president on intelligence. Who is Maher Bitar? He is a radical progressive, went to Georgetown University, was head of the was involved with the BDS movement the communist socialist BDS movement, which is anti-Israeli and wants to destroy Israel. He then became an employee of the United Nations Relief Works Agency, which is the UN body that is Palestinian, that is building the schools that were used as missile launching pads, and the hospitals that were used as arsenals and also missile launching pads. And so this is the guy now who heads all intelligence coming in and out of the White House, and is the eyes and ears of the entire White House structure, including the president and vice president, for all matters intelligence. This is who runs our government.
And he is a Palestinian radical.
Exactly. So one wonders,
Well, that's why when we're talking about the communications being hit and a potential cyber ops, we already know Afghan military equipment and Ukrainian equipment that was sent to Ukraine and sent to Afghan has already, we already know it was in the hands of Hamas when they carried out this attack. We know that. We also know that this money was released to Iran, and for Blinken to suggest that none of that money made its way into the hands of Hamas, he can't say that. I mean, he just can't say that.
I want Blinken to go to one of the corners in Washington, which are filled with druggies, sitting there in their stupor, that are begging for money, and give him a $5 bill, but tell him he can only use it for food. You really think that's going to happen?
Well,
and even if he does use it for food, that means he can use the $5 that are in his pocket for drugs. Money's fungible, for God's sake. Anybody who has a kid knows money's fungible.
Well, that's like
a dollar for lunch money. He may use it to buy the cool crayon. You know,
giving Planned Parenthood $400 million annually and then saying, oh, they don't use any of that money for abortions.
Correct.
Well, rent. Lights, the electricity, it's funding the facility, and the facility is where the abortions take place. It's absolute insanity.
It's dissembling. It's deliberate misleading.
All right.
He knows better.
Well, here's the thing, though, David, in light of all, I mean, you know, because one of the other things, and we'll kind of close out with this, but as we were talking, one of the other pieces is people are talking about chain reactions. I mean, it becomes pretty obvious now when you look at and you consider this mapping situation, that if you end up with, you know, an attack in Lebanon, an attack coming in from Syria, the gray area within your own borders where attacks continue, by the way, we know that. And you know, I mean, I know they're rooting that out, but that's a huge challenge. And then the southern attacks in Gaza and the potential breakdown in Egypt. I mean, the entire country's integrity is in huge
correct.
Assault. Correct. It's fractured. Correct. It's fractured. That is going to ultimately leave them with not too many options, because somewhere in this, they're going to have to deploy something that ends the potential of a problem on one of these fronts. In other words, they can continue to fight on one front, but and Gaza seems to be the most logical initial point because of just where it is and how it's located. But the word is that if they hit Gaza too hard, that's going to be used as the germinating point for assaults by these Muslim factions around the world to launch their attacks. And each day, or each hour, I should even suggest, as these things are mounting, we edge closer and closer to that point. Where I'm going in my thoughts and in my question here is in light of the Arian Tabatabai, the Arian Tabatabai And now, you know, the revelation too about, you know, Mahir Batar, in the places that are making the intelligence decisions as to what the United States is going to do, while back here behind their back, passing all of that information on to their networks, unless we cut that head off and we move those people out of those positions, the United States' entrance into this conflict is actually going to be detrimental to what would quote-unquote normally be our side, because they're going to be leaking all of the plans and information to the enemy, as I see it.
That's quite possible. There's big question marks about what's happened here, and what you're outlining, I wish I could say it's fantastic, but it's not. It's quite plausible. Unfortunately, it's quite plausible, and there's many unexplained things, and this, unfortunately, it's going to range into areas like this. The real answers.
Well, what we're going to have...
It's a disturbing situation. It's a disturbing Very. Situation about the integrity of the United States' structures that also. Again, we can't fight our enemies. We can't be a superpower. We can't continue to be the great America that we all know and love if we let our enemies take us over from within.
Yeah. Well, and this was the battle, as I keep coming back to my dearly departed friend Phil Haney, but this was the battle that he was talking about. It's the battle that John Gundola was talking about. It's the battle that Frank Gaffney has talked about. A variety of them have all suggested the same thing, that we have people, and this really started with, you know, I guess really Bill Clinton, in my mind. More so than anything else. Although I'm not sure that George H.W. Bush didn't have some people that he brought in that were not necessarily in our best interest, as he worked very diligently to undermine Ronald Reagan during his presidency and then literally obliterate us in the 4 years from 88 to 92, setting the table up for Bill Clinton to do what he has done to us. But all that being said, these are very perilous times that we find ourselves in.
You know, in World War II, I had a professor when I was in college who lived through World War II, okay. Professor Bernard Lewis. And I asked him, you know, about the line in what is it? Not Maltese Falcon, the other great Casablanca. Where the Czech underground goes, oh, well, if the Americans join, then we'll win. So I asked him, you know, was that really the feeling? And he goes, no, that was not the turning point. What was the real turning point was we knew what the enemy was. We understood who the enemy was, the Nazis.
Right.
The real turning point was when we remembered who we were. Because once we remembered who we were, mm-hmm. Britain, the force of freedom,
right,
the great British Empire, and we regained our own moral confidence, then we knew we'd beat the Nazis. And then when the Americans joined, it was just, that was it. They're dead. The Nazis are dead.
Right.
Because Britain alone wouldn't have been able to do it. But they knew that America would come into the game. Because they knew if they were morally clear, the Americans eventually would also become morally clear, because we in Britain come from the same foundations.
Okay.
So it was our moral clarity that turned the war, not even understanding their moral depravity.
Right.
It was the clarity of our morality.
Right.
That is what right now is on the table.
It's what's missing.
Anybody in the world, if we remember who we are. And that's true of the Israelis, too. They can beat any of their enemies.
Yeah.
As long as they remember who they are. And that's the one thing I can say that's good coming out of this war. The Israelis were tearing themselves to shreds in the last 6 months. You and I talked about this endlessly.
Yes.
there's not a left or right in Israel right now.
Praise God.
This country, Hamas did the one thing. They made 10 million Jews agree with each other. That is a miracle.
Well, it's and amen. And you know, I think that's a perfect place to close, because at the end of the day, folks, that is the bottom line. At the end of the day, the bottom line is we've got to remember who we are, and we've got to walk under that moral banner that is raised for us, that is the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and the Holy Scriptures, and what God's Word has to say. And if we will get back to that and walk in that truth, we will be victorious.
Indeed. Amen.
All right. David, thank you. I appreciate you being with me. I'm going to cut our recording off. You can get more. You'll be able to pick this up at the website, chosengenerationradio.com. And then I'm going to sign us out of the social media as well. Thank you all so much for watching. Greatly appreciate it. I hope you've enjoyed it and found it to be insightful. I will see you tomorrow. Hang tight. I've got a... sinus infection thing that I'm fighting.